Over 200 years ago, the American states joined together to form a federal union which protected citizens' democratic rights. Can the European Union accomplish the same thing?
The European Union has, in fact, reached a major turning point. Next May, 10 new nations will join the alliance, the biggest membership intake since its inception in 1957. Last month, governments from the existing 10 countries and the accession states met to discuss exactly how the larger organization will function. But what impact will the changes have on European democracy? Suzanne Chislett reports from London.
What began as a six-country trading bloc has grown into a major alliance with its own currency, parliament, council of ministers, law courts, legal and social directives, and cross-border cooperation. The European Union is seen as a beacon to which similar economic alliances in Africa and South America in particular aspire. But although it's led to millions of jobs, millions of euros of aid being given to the poorer regions and helped break down cultural borders, the EU is not without problems.
How can an entity of that size be anything other than remote to the people within it?
That's Brian Groom, editor of the European edition of the Financial Times newspaper.
It is perfectly feasible that the institutions of enlargement will be made to work. The European Union will not seize up. Its decision-making will function. But the real challenge is making that broader union work economically and politically for the people it's intended to serve.
450 million people in 25 member states will be part of the European Union beginning next May. From Romania in the east to Spain in the west, Britain and Estonia in the north, to Italy and Greece in the south. Each nation has a number of diverse cultures. There are socialist, conservative and coalition governments, dozens of languages and religions. And making the European Union work for all is a very difficult task. The most accessible layer of government is the European Parliament. Its representatives are elected regionally by the people of the EU. But voter turnout is poor at best. In Britain, around a third of eligible voters cast their ballots in the last round of elections, and the picture is similar across much of the Union. Nevertheless, Charles Jenkins, director of the Economist Intelligence Unit, believes it is the most democratic form of government for the future of the EU.
There's really quite a long way to go to make the European Parliament a more effective democratic institution. Though, having said that, it's a lot better than nothing. It does work. It's there. If people are interested, they can vote and they can lobby their member of the European Parliament.
At the highest level, the European Union is overseen by a Council of Ministers made up of heads of government from the member states. Every 6 months, the EU presidency rotates through the member states, but that will not be practical after enlargement. It's proposed that a chairman, probably a former national leader, will be elected by the Council to serve for several years. That means the people of Europe will have no say in their new leader.
Well, I think it has an impact on individuals if we don't get a say as to who we want elected. To be honest, I don't really feel that we're informed enough about what exactly is going on.
Well, I guess there must be a reason for it. Maybe it's because some nations are so big that it would be an advantage for them if we got to vote. I mean, all the Germans would vote for a German president, probably. So all the other small countries wouldn't have a chance.
I would probably care if I knew more about it, but I really have no idea about the whole system, so I don't really care.
Across the rest of the world, the European Union is increasingly being seen as a mini-continent within Europe, but it's not the same entity. And when enlargement occurs next May, the new EU will have a dramatic effect on its new members, as well as its new neighbours. At a fundamental level, the new border around the 25 nations will lead to changes in lifestyle for hundreds of thousands of people, particularly along its eastern edge, where former Soviet border agreements, which had allowed some free movement, will cease to exist. Dr. Katerina Waltschuk is a lecturer in Ukrainian studies at the University of Birmingham. She says those outside the EU were in danger of being forgotten by the organisation.
Lots of people in the new European Union's borderlands live off the border. They benefit from the ability to cross the border.
As far as crossing borders go, are we in danger as the EU enlarges and the border tightens of actually
reverting back to the days when there was an Iron Curtain separating Europe, which meant travel from one side to the other was very, very difficult, if not impossible.
Absolutely. This is, for many people in the countries which are excluded, it means that basically the Iron Curtain is going to move several hundred kilometers to the east. So actually freedom of travel, being able to move freely to a neighboring country, the right, the fundamental human right, which they were denied under communism, now it's going to be taken away from them, but this time it's by a democratic European Union.
Exactly how the European Union will work in the future has yet to be confirmed, and the new draft constitution has yet to be tested. It will mean closer integration in many areas and more majority voting with less national vetoes. But the true democratic impact on individual citizens is as yet unknown. For Common Ground, I'm Suzanne Chislett in London.